Hello and welcome to the Musicians Met podcast. I'm Kane Power. If you've enjoyed any of the previous podcasts, or if you're about to enjoy this one, please consider supporting Musicians Met by buying the ebook or the audiobook. The Musicians Met book is a guide to building success in music and includes advice about everything from listening and learning an instrument through to touring and releasing music as an independent musician. You can find the book on sites like Amazon and Audible, or you can get both the ebook and the audiobook at musiciansmap.org. Your voice can be the most difficult instrument to master. Not only does it require practice and discipline like other instruments, but it requires an additional amount of self-awareness, self-belief, and courage. Your voice is personal and entirely unique. Sharing it with an audience is to share an essential part of who you are. I'm listening to music and providing feedback to artists on a daily basis, and the number one comment I make is, you need to work on your singing. So in this episode, we're talking about vocals, why they're so important, where you're going wrong, and how to make them better. My guest today is the incredible Cherie Matheson. Cherie is a singer, songwriter, producer, vocal coach, and artist development mentor via her awesome site, bignotesgetvotes.com. We caught up over Skype. Cherie, welcome to the Musicians Met podcast. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So I actually want to start by sharing an article that I found this morning. It's written by someone called Cassandra Shepherd from upliftconnect.com. It's called The Neuroscience of Singing. And before we get into our discussion, I just want to kind of refer to this article a little bit and read a couple of excerpts from it. So it says, the neuroscience of singing shows that when we sing, our neurotransmitters connect in new and different ways. It fires up the right temporal lobe of our brain and releases endorphins that make us smarter, healthier, happier, and more creative. And especially when we sing with other people, the effect is amplified. And she goes on to say that it's a biological connection that we have to ourselves and to each other. And so singing goes back, you know, as far as we can remember and has evolved. And it's effectively the good feelings you get is an evolutionary reward for cooperation.
100%.
I just thought that was so interesting because I want to start by talking about why vocals and singing is so important. Why they are such the link to our audience that they are.
Well, I've read that article. That is a great article because it does talk about the primal aspects of singing and the way that we feel physiologically from it. And the history of singing is really awesome. I quite enjoy the idea of, because primarily our larynx is actually for protection. So humans are actually amazing because we've figured out a way to make sound from them, you know, birds, humans, animals, I guess. But it was with animals, it was primarily for survival. And in the beginning, the group, the chorus, was devised, I guess, through evolution to scare off animals and to help our survival. Wow. So that's why the chorus is so important, because we need to all sing together to literally save ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
it is kind of exciting to read about the history of singing. But, yeah, primarily the larynx is a protective. It's kind of the musculature protects your airways. So the fact that we've kind of coordinated and figured out how to make sound and in such a controlled way is awesome. But it is harder because the instrument's inside of your body. So you can't kind of put your fingers on it like you can a piano, or you can't understand the inner working. So yeah, I guess that's why it's a lot harder to kind of be a good singer. But at the same time, we all have the instrument, which is why we're so attuned to it, because we understand the sound, we can all make the sounds through speech. But then it just kind of gets a little bit energized once you start adding singing into the mix, and it's there's all these little things at play, and you need to kind of coordinate and understand the impact that all these movements can have, both from a physiological perspective, but then also how you can use the tools to connect with the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it is, it's your, as a performer and as a singer, it is really, your kind of, it's almost like a primal connection with your
exactly.
audience.
100%. That's exactly what it
so,
is.
So, I mean, you're effectively conveying, more than just sound.
You know,
it's emotion. It is that connection, which I guess is the entire reason why we'll kind of, why we're doing this podcast, but why people sing.
Yeah, these days it's a little less scaring off lions from attacking you,
yeah. but,
and a little more, you know, let me show you how much I love you. So, yeah, the evolution and the use of it, of course, is much different, but the purpose and the intent is still exactly the same.
Yeah. So in a modern context, we use it as... I mean, and if you're thinking pop music, which is kind of where I want to sort of focus on, it's the focal point, right?
Yeah.
You're providing the focal point for your audience to connect to the song. It conveys your meaning and your message through the lyrics. How kind of important do you think lyrics are these days?
Well, when a song like Despacito, which is in Spanish, is the most streamed song in the entire universe, not as important as melody and phrasing, because we don't even understand what they're saying,
yeah.
and we like it. So lyrics are important, but I think the delivery of the lyrics, so repetition, you know, getting into a little bit of songwriting, I guess, you know, repetition and allowing phrasing to have some form of tension and release as well. So you can apply your, you know, the way a singer phrases is key, you know, and singers that play drums or have a grounding in some kind of rhythmic based instrument, when I say rhythmic, you know, bass drums specifically,
yeah,
tend to, and I'll give you two examples, Adele and sorry, but Justin Bieber,
yeah,
have a better understanding of being in the pocket vocally because they play an instrument. And of course you're a drummer, so I'm assuming it's the, you know, you get that, right?
Yep, I get it. Do you think, just a little tangent, do you think that's kind of why hip hop is so popular? Because of the phrasing, because, you know.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like rapping is so hard to do, and I've tried.
Yeah.
And even beatboxing is really hard to do because it's a coordination of a different, you know, you're coordinating in a different way. So I guess if I focused on it, anybody, if you focus on anything, you can probably give it a good go. But like with, you know, the people that are at the top of the game, singers, rappers, any kind of instrumentalists as well, there's something that it's the signature that becomes your, you know, that makes you special. It's how you coordinate all the nuances, how you utilize the tools in sequence so that there's a sense of repetition and recognition, so that the listener can turn on the radio and go, that's Adele.
Yeah.
And of course it's timbre and tone and that kind of stuff. But rap in particular, I love listening to melodic rap, which I don't know if that's even a thing. That's just what I call it.
Yeah,
where
I think
it's, you know, where it sounds like I really like Jay-Z for his words, the lyrics again. Probably, I'm probably not his demographic, but melodically, how he, you know, raps, I find really engaging. Then there's also people who speak. really great orators like Barack Obama and Maya Angelou, when they speak, it sounds like they're singing, you know. So it's the counterpoint of, so yeah, anything where speech is kind of, you're flipping the script a little bit and using ways of making that nuance your own is really exciting, and it will captivate regardless of the genre.
Mm. But pitch is also integral though, right?
I mean, you'd like to think so, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. and it's so often where people are going wrong. I think, I mean, what you've said about timbre and tone, but the rhythmic element to it, I think is maybe something that a lot of people overlook and focus on pitch over everything else. But people are still going really quite wrong in that aspect. So just another reason possibly why it's so important is that I think when you're listening to music, you know, obviously we've talked about how you connect to the vocals, but you can kind of feel like, oh, I know I do. Sometimes I feel like the artist's voice is representing my voice.
Right.
You know, and so you're connecting through not only how they sound and how they express, but the lyrics that they're singing, you know. And so if you really like a certain style of music, you're connecting to their voice specifically, and you judge their voice on how you can relate to it. You know, which is same. You mentioned Justin Bieber. You know, I don't relate to him, so I don't really connect with his music. Whereas obviously, a ton of people do relate to and connect with him. So, is that why it's so integral? Now let's move on to pitch to be correct.
In this day and age, specifically in contemporary music and the particular production styles that are happening. Unfortunately, pitch is not the first focus because it can be auto-tuned and everything is auto-tuned. However, you should really have, you should be able to get the fundamental tone, recognize it, and be able to deliver it. You know, that's, I think, cooler as an instrumentalist and a musician. To be able to connect with the frequency that you're, and by the way, pitch is the perception of frequency. It isn't, frequency is the actual scientific explanation of the note, but pitch is your perception of it. So that's where things can kind of go wrong sometimes, because we have, again, another reason that it's really challenging or can be harder to learn singing or be good at singing is what you're hearing in your head is different to what's sonically happening outside of your head, you know.
Yeah.
So learning to connect all the dots through ear training and practice and just understand, like I have three things that I try to get my singers to do is to think about it from three perspectives, how it looks. So when you're practicing, use a mirror. How does it look? You know, how's the physiology stacking up? How's your posture?
Hmm.
How does it feel? Because we all have done gigs where you cannot hear the monitoring in any way, shape, or form. So if you have a kinesthetic response, you understand where frequency actually is through your body, then you can recreate that. And the same with the actual technique elements of, you know, placing the sound. And then lastly, how does it sound? So if you can kind of lean on those other senses as well, you're always aligning.
Yeah.
And making sure that you've got something rock solid to lean on.
That's perfect. So how, let's expand on those three things. How do we know that we're doing it right?
Generally, if we start with how does it look?
Yep.
Ideally you would have a neutral posture, which feels really weird when you do it because you kind of feel like you're tucking your butt under a little bit, and that's just purely to make sure that you are allowing an infrastructure that is not compromised for allowing air to come up in a steady stream. So it's that simple. The in-breath isn't as important. It's all about obviously the out-breath. because that's what's going to create the fundamental tone when the air moves through your vocal folds. Mm. So when you practice, and again, practicing and performance are two different things. You want to do all this hard work and be really focused on what you're doing while you're in the rehearsal studio or practice studio, and maintain your posture and look straight ahead and check your chin, all the technical elements. Once that's second nature, once that's sort of subconscious, then you can sing standing on your head if you want, and the physiology should still stack up.
Sure.
But once when you're actually practicing, you just sort of check the posture, and how it should feel is effortless every time. With high notes, you need less air, and with low notes, you need more air. So that's usually something that, as singers, they tend to push for the high notes, and that also messes with your pitch because you're blowing too much air through the vocal folds, and they literally just kind of pop open, and then the resonance and the placement comes from when the air particles kind of just literally resonate in your mouth, and you can change that by shaping your mouth differently, opening it up a little bit more. I say imagining the sound with placement, resonance and placement, again, like with pitch and frequency, resonance is what's actually going on, and placement's where you're thinking it's going on to help you get whatever you need out of the sound. So I say like thinking the sound forward, or trying to get the sound to sort of almost come out of your nose, or swallowing the sound for a darker tone. So forward in your face generally is, excuse me, is brighter, and further in the back of your mouth is darker or warmer.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's it in a nutshell. So making sure that all your physiology is in place can help to just make sure that you're kind of setting things up right to be able to do your tricks and throw your bits and bobs around.
Yeah, I'm finding myself sitting up and kind of thinking about where I'm talking from. That's interesting that, because I do yoga sometimes, and they say, think about where you want to relax, right? And so that's a similar thing. You're thinking about where you want to feel your voice coming from and directing it there. Am I right?
Yeah, totally. And so the speaking thing is, because we speak more than we sing, what happens is the times that we usually damage our voice are not when we're on stage, it's when we're speaking. The best example for musicians is when you do a gig, you get on stage and you're like, right, focus, technique, and you sing with amazing technique, and then you get off stage and you have a beer and start yelling over loud music. And then you assume the next morning when you wake up and you're like that, that it was because you pushed a little too hard in the gig, but it's actually everything that you did off stage. So what I did, I've done a couple of, I like doing experiments with my voice. I did a really great voice science course. It's called a still voice technique. And I was sitting in the course, and every time I spoke, the instructor would say, "What's wrong with your voice?" And I was like, I was getting quite worried. And she said to me, "Okay, you are applying too much weight in your speaking voice." So I kind of make a joke and say, I used to talk like Helen Clarkson. I used to be like this all the time. And I'd be like, the whole day you'd be talking like this. And then you'd go to a gig and then you'd have to smash out three sets of something. All I needed to do, literally, to balance my tone was to try to speak as if I was a little, like a small child. So I try and speak quite lightly. Not necessarily with better enunciation,
but not like this.
And not only did that save my voice, it also helped me to develop that counterpoint for my tone. So I have a more balanced tone just from being mindful of how I speak every day.
And does that work into your second point and your three points about being comfortable?
Yeah, 100%, because we're so time strapped at the moment, I think in life in general, that if you can practice every day with your speaking voice, that's going to strengthen that coordination. When you come to sing, it's going to be that much easier. So you'll just be more aware of it, of what it sounds like to have a lighter tone, a lighter tonality. And when I work with my singers, we do what I call primal sounds. So we try to use things that access the different voice qualities that you can make. Because I believe that your voice is just one voice. There's not sort of, it's not restricted by registrations, just the sounds that you want to make. So you need to figure out how to, again, because you can't put your hand on your into your larynx and kind of manipulate it, you just need to figure out ways to trigger those sounds with thought. So, for example, I was talking to your lovely wife, Ruth, about how to preserve her voice in a loud environment. And the best thing to do is to utilize what's called twang. And it's basically to sound like Fran Drescher from The Nanny. So you get a little bit more extreme nasality. But when you're in a pub, usually the bass is boosted. So what you're needing to do is to get into the upper frequencies to go above. Or the alternate is if you're in a rock band and you're playing with a lot of guitars, which are a similar frequency range to the voice, like Led Zeppelin, for example. Robert Plant nails it. Mm. He's got that, you know, that kind twang that he uses specifically to stand out over the guitars, you know, when you sing. Wow. And it's a beautiful preservation tool for your voice as well. So, yeah, once you, if you play around with these primal sounds when you're speaking, it makes it that much easier to just trigger it again when you're singing.
Man.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, it answers above and beyond. It's that's so interesting, eh? I'm going to be, for the next few days, I'm going to be walking around singing like Robert Plant, or I don't know, messing with my voice. I think that's really, really cool. Yes. I use my voice on the podcast and a couple of other instances, but I've a few videos and stuff, but I don't really sing. But it's still applicable, I think.
Always. Even it's applicable to everybody. Mm. I wanted to kind of go to like into schools to help teachers, because the number one reason that people take time off work is loss of voice.
Really?
Yeah. Like, you know, teachers and speaking professionals.
Yeah.
And the problem is that, you know, as we've seen much very publicly, people like Adele, it's not something that's ever fixed 100%. So if you continue to put the same demands on your voice without, you know, tweaking your technique or tweaking your environment and what the pressures are put on you, you're just going to keep having the same problems. I mean, she did something mental like 143 shows, which is insane in anybody's books. But she is also that belter. She's that kind of singer where it's everything.
Yeah.
You know, and she does use some interesting nuances, which are not necessarily technically sustainable long term, like, ah, Daniel, you know, that kind of growly thing that she does. But that's what we want. That's where the emotion lives.
Yeah.
You know, those sort of nuances. And also that's why I call my company Big Notes Get Votes, because they actually do. Like, everybody screams. If you ever watch any kind of, you know, X Factor, as soon as someone goes to the money note,
everyone
goes wild. That's probably primarily because that's what scared off the lion. You know what I mean?
Nice. Yeah.
That's probably what it is. But it makes us feel something. We kind of get goosebumps and we feel a little bit excited. And, And, oh, a side note, I did warn you that I would probably just stream of consciousness go crazy. but you can actually, back to speaking, you can align your you can almost transcribe your speaking voice. And you will see that, say, if your fundamental tone is, I don't know, C, middle C, any excitement point from there will almost always be an interval of a fifth. So there's, you can assign things like excitement, because you'll go like, if I don't have perfect pitch, so if middle C is kind of like around here, I don't know, you'd go, oh my God, it's amazing, I can't believe that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's that kind of thing as well too. We can assign excitement by certain intervallic jumps and singing, and that's kind of, I think, I mean, that's why you'll always hear a pre-chorus in a song has generally a third to a fifth lift from the verse.
Yeah.
And then in popular music at the moment, octaves are huge, so you will always generally hear some kind of octave on the chorus, even if it's in the same registration. You will lift it with an octave, so yeah. It will always be an octave up. Yeah, and that's just a way of, engaging the listener using things like intervals. And that's what ear training is important as
okay,
well.
Okay, so that's perfectly linking into the third part of it.
I can't believe you managed to link that in.
Well, ear training, how do people know how they if they sound good? So we're talking, if you look good, if you're comfortable, and if you sound good, right?
Yes.
So
yes,
how do you know for an amateur singer? How can you kind of tell?
If you're an amateur or beginner, I would use technology or an instrument 100%, because it's just about pitch matching in the beginning. It's about the fundamentals. So getting on a piano and just singing C, and then especially a major scale, because anybody can kind of start. For most female and male ranges, anybody can kind of start middle C and work your way up. It's easy. It's all the white notes. You don't have to overthink if you're not an instrumentalist. And make sure that you ascend and descend to strengthen the coordination and the association of the pitch as well too. Because I think, again, in popular music, singers will generally go for the lift, but you very rarely hear descending runs, because it's not taking you anywhere.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
And so singers are generally a little weak, me included, on the descending, any descending intervals.
So practice up and down.
Yes, please. And then you know, if you haven't got access to a piano, there are apps that you can use. There's one that I use called Music Tutor, and there's also an online site called musictheory.net, and it's games. So they'll play a note and then you'll pitch match. It's kind of fun.
Awesome. Okay. Now, before we move on, I want to just do a quick fire rundown of some techniques that anyone can start to apply to improve their vocals.
Great.
Practice, how often, when, how long?
Well, it does depend on how, you know, how much stamina you have as a vocalist. So for a beginner, maybe 30 to 45 minutes maximum a day as you're building. And I like to think of a practice plan as something that's fun. So it's not just working your, you know, trying to get better, also sing something that makes you feel good, because we often go into it feeling a bit afterwards. And then for a pro, you could definitely do 60 minutes or more a day, depending on your vocal stamina. And again, it depends what you're working on. So you might split up your practice over 5 days. And it's always, I mean, like, I'm kind of a fan of having a rest day in between, depending on your workload. I used to be a personal trainer, and so for a long time, I train my vocal clients like I used to train my exercise clients, because it's just a muscle.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, you know. So think about it from that perspective. If you just want to get fit, go 3 times a week. If you want to run a marathon, you're going to be going 6 times a week, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, excuse me, really focused on what you're doing. Like when I used to tour a lot, I would put the playlist into my iTunes or whatever, and I would get up at 3, go to the gym when no one was there, and I would run on the treadmill as I was singing the set, because I knew that if I could sing it while I was running, I could totally sing it with a few kind of subtle dance moves happening. Yeah. And the same with if you're training for something, try to sing it a semitone higher than you would usually do it, because then when you come back to sing it in its in the original key, it'll be like a walk in the park.
Oh, that's like I used to rehearse with heavier drumsticks and then gig with lighter drumsticks.
Exactly.
I've also just gotten into singing on the treadmill as well.
I quite often make people run and do star jumps and stuff in my lounge room.
It's so hard though, you know, because you start out, you put on a good playlist and you start out like sort of grooving and running and sort of singing, and then, you know, a few minutes in you're sort of puffing, and it's just, yeah, it gave me a whole new appreciation for singers doing a, you know, a full-on set, because out of being out of breath and having to get those notes, it's tricky.
Just a side note, I sang, I do experiments all the time. So I put a heart rate monitor. Mm. I was training for a 5K and I was like, man, I wonder if singing is as impactful as like going for my 30-minute run or whatever. So I put a heart rate monitor on and I wasn't even jumping up and down. It was kind of like a cocktail gig. So I was just doing the old sidestep. And two 45-minute sets had the same energy expenditure and got my heart rate up in exactly the same way as I did when I was training for the 5K.
Wow.
Which is insane. I think, you know, it's just the controlled breathing or the focused breathing, I should say.
Yep.
Being mindful and, yeah, it's kind of crazy. Singing is, I say singers are athletes. They absolutely are, because your voice is your body's your instrument, and you've got so many things at play, like hormones for women is a huge one that can affect your body, facial structure, bone structure. So one kind of trying to connect about how it sounds, it's always going to be, it's such an objective thing. I think if you enjoy the sound that's coming out of your mouth and it makes you feel good, that's the first step. And then if other people connect with you because you're being mindful about your delivery, that's a win, you know.
Yeah,
that's 100% win. But we can kind of get a little bit caught up in what sounds good. You know, I think it depends on who you're singing to and what they like more than anything, and what you like.
Yeah, that's great advice. That is, I often hear singers that have really unique voices, and they say straight out, like, my voice is a bit weird, you know, tell me if it's good. And, you know, you always kind of have to say it's your voice. Like,
exactly.
And weird is good. You know, full stop. Ooh. Like, think of Billy Corgan as the first guy that comes to mind. You know, what an amazing singer, and people love him because of his voice and because of that he connects to his audience. So some other quick fire
techniques.
Let's just recording yourself is a great way.
Yeah, it really is.
Using your smartphone, even.
Yeah, video is always best. And if you do it like, you know, keep it at eye level so you can see your posturing, because you see things that you wouldn't, you know, when you're in the mirror, watching in the mirror and you're singing, you're focusing hopefully on one thing at a time. That's the best practice tip I've got, is focus on one thing at a time. So if you're working on your vibrato, don't worry about pitch. Don't worry about anything else. Just vibrato the whole song and the control of it, the placement of it. And then you can move on to whatever else. But there's so much to think about that you're not kind of 100% paying attention. So if you video yourself, you can watch back and see little physical nuances that impact more than you would have thought. I'll give you an example. Mine was, I studied at Berkeley online, got my voice technique and my pop specialist papers. And the medium is, of course, that you have to video yourself. So I had to do videos every week, I think, for like 12 weeks or whatever it was. And I'd never done it before. And I would do this thing where I'd sing and I'd like pull my shoulders up. And it wasn't even like a hard part of the song, but that's creating tension in your neck. And then, you know, your shoulders, and then in turn your neck, and everything gets tense. And so all I did was just relax my shoulders and focus on, and it made such a difference.
Wow.
But I wouldn't have known that but yeah, not watching myself back.
So video and watch and pay attention. Yep. Now, what about you? You very eloquently put a point I had about using your mouth in different ways. Something I always say to people is to please open your mouth.
Yes.
When you sing, people are singing through gritted teeth or singing with their mouths closed. So opening mouth, but I think you've already done that better than I could. What about singing from your stomach? I was always told, and I don't know if it's legit, but I was always told, you know, you should be using your stomach to project your voice rather than your throat, especially if you're in a rock or metal, or if you're screaming or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what happens is all these different terminologies get thrown around and it kind of becomes a bit blurred and confusing. So I always lean on science, and the science is that your lungs provide the air that comes through your vocal folds. And what people talk about a lot is diaphragmatic breathing. And what all that is your diaphragm is a dome-shaped muscle, and it kind of sits kind of double-domed, and it attaches to the base of your larynx. So the cool thing and the great thing about a diaphragm is that it's involuntary, because we need it to trigger while we're sleeping our lungs to breathe. So you actually can't control it per se, but you can control the muscles and the infrastructure that it's attached to, which are your ribs. It's attached to the obviously to your lungs and to your spine. So when I think people talk about breathing from your stomach, what they're trying to do is to get you to breathe 360 degrees. So not just with your chest, like that kind of thing, you know. So again, it's just terminology. So short answer, yes, but it's more about engaging also your ribs. Your rib cage can open up back. You can kind of breathe into your back, I've heard people call it, but I refer to it as 360 degrees of breathing.
Mm.
And then again, it's not so much about the inward breath, it's about the outward breath and controlling the steady stream of air so that you've got enough to do whatever you want to do with it. And that just involves a slow release of your rib cage, and in turn the diaphragm drops down to pull, you know, create a vacuum, and the lungs fill up with air.
Mm.
And then when the ribs release, it pushes, and if you see this, it pushes back up, and the air is pushed out of your lungs. So if you can control that by using your rib cage and I guess your stomach, then you're winning. And it's actually easy. It's actually really easy. We do it. We breathe every day.
Yeah.
So we're obviously doing something right.
Yeah.
I think we just kind of get our heads a bit. One of the things that the best tip I can give you about breathing is to let out half your air before you sing. So you would take a normal breath, and then you would just go, and that's your singing point from there. And you've still actually got a lot of air. So you try doing that and then speaking a phrase.
Okay, yeah. I just tried it then. It's really interesting. I guarantee you that everyone listening to this podcast has been holding their stomach and you know,
totally,
sort of tensing some muscles and trying to figure out how to do what you're talking about.
Part of it's vanity as well too, because we don't want to relax, because you've got to actually relax your stomach muscles to be able to engage. A good tip is to like lean on a table, you know, standing up, leaning on a table and just letting it kind of literally hang out.
Yeah.
And then do your breathing exercises, because then you can't kind of pull in your tummy.
Mm.
And that's what a lot of people do, is they hold their abs so tight that they can't actually allow that breath action to happen, the diaphragm to drop completely.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so now the best way to implement a lot of these techniques, and it's something that I tell so many people, is to seek seek a vocal coach to help. So what do you think? I mean, you are a vocal coach, so I want to know. Oh, I think the listeners probably want to know why it's really important to seek out a vocal coach when you're starting out, and even when you're a professional already.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm constantly looking for somebody to work with. I think we get better when we have somebody to mentor us. I mean, that's the fundamental thing. Mm. And generally, I love the idea I've heard that, you know, the five people that you spend the most time with are the ones that shape you. So musically, spend time with people that are better than you, you know, yeah. ideally,
yeah.
so that you can learn. So that in itself is, you know, it's just the mentoring, but also the experience of what works. You do need to find somebody that's a right fit for you from a personality perspective. Vocal coaching, I'm like half therapist, half vocal coach.
Yeah.
So you kind of do have to, we do a lot of talking because your body's your instrument. If you're tense, if something's on your mind, you're not going to be able to connect with the task at hand, which yeah. is singing and being free and expressing emotion. So yeah, you know, it's important. And it's a vocal coach is your cheerleader. You know, I'm a cheerleader for a singer so that when they're not feeling great about themselves, we talk, we figure out why that is, try to remind ourselves to have some tips in place to negate or to try to remove those thoughts from happening again. And the best thing you can do to build confidence is to have a really solid technique and know what you're doing.
Mm. Mm.
You know, as to the best of your ability. I mean, we're always learning and the discovery is the fun part. But yeah, just getting some really solid foundations to build your vocals from so that you can express yourself in the best way possible.
And where should people start to look for a vocal coach?
Referrals are really good. So, because as we know, like Google is great, but that just means they've got great SEO.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I think you need to really talk to people. And there are even, you know, Facebook groups are quite good. Like if you belong to a musician's group or a singer's group, ask on Facebook for a few referrals. Absolutely. Have a couple of sessions with a few people. I generally talk to people first before I meet with them, and I have a little questionnaire that I get them to fill out so I can delve a little bit deeper into what they want and make sure that I can give it to them.
Mm.
And then usually we'll just go straight into lessons from that point.
And what kind of sort of when you get a vocal coach, how often will you be seeing them? What kind of plan you're on? How many lessons should you do?
I think it's going to be, you know, of course, different for each person. The way that I run my sessions, I do 90-minute lessons usually because that allows for the therapy session.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what I do is I audio record everything and I video record the entire lesson, and then we have a Dropbox where I upload everything. And they can go back and review it and implement the tools that we've kind of covered. So it's quite an intensive session. So I recommend every 2 to 4 weeks for my clients. But, you know, some people would just like to have a sing every week.
Yeah.
So it depends on what you're working on. If someone's working on a song, every week is great. Mm. If you're working on intensive technique stuff, or if you're prepping for a live performance, or you've got your EP release and you're building your stamina weekly, is great.
Awesome. And I mean, it's obvious, I think, that you would see more results through seeing a vocal coach than self-directed learning and self-directed study. Is that what you found?
Yeah, I do think that there is, I think it's speed. So if you want things to happen faster, then go and see a vocal coach. You can absolutely figure things out by yourself. But you will, especially with YouTube, but mind you, you're filtering like lots and lots of crap.
Yeah.
So it just depends how much time you have to invest. If you really want to be serious about your craft, then you need to invest in both energy and money into up leveling. You know, so short answer, you can see results by yourself just through awareness, but you're going to have it so much quicker and more focused if you see somebody that can help you with what you want to improve.
Amazing. Cherie, thank you so much. You've been absolutely incredible. This has been enlightening, and we've gotten deep. It's so good.
We probably intended to. Sorry, Kane. But...
No, it's brilliant. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And that's the podcast for this week. Thank you so much to my guest, Cherie Matheson, and thank you for listening and or watching if you're getting this on YouTube. For more of Cherie and her many areas of expertise, head to bignotesgetvotes.com and sign up to her 30-day challenge to get gig fit. Go to the URL in the podcast description, enter your details, and you'll receive a free resource guide. The artist of the week this week is Our Oceans. Our Oceans are an otherworldly, deeply melancholic post-rock band from the Netherlands. Check them out at ouroceans.net and facebook.com/ouroceans. The Musicians Map podcast is part of the Musicians Map website, where you can find lots more articles and videos, as well as my ebook and audiobook about building success in music. In that book, you'll find experienced-based advice about every aspect of learning music, from listening and learning an instrument to recording, gigging, touring, and making money as a musician. For those of you wanting to get serious about your musical journey, I offer one-on-one development sessions and song critiques, which are honestly an incredible way to gain the focus and direction required to achieve your goals, whatever they might be. I've also got a free 5-step challenge to a clear musical pathway. Sign up now on the Musicians Map website and learn how to find your voice, refine your focus, and follow your true calling. This is essential advice for new and aspiring musicians, and it's totally free. So once again, head to musiciansmap.org to take advantage of all of the resources on offer. Also, please get in touch with your comments and suggestions and let me know what challenges you're facing over at the Musicians Map Facebook group. I always respond. Stay positive.